M33, number 4B.
I remember especially a journal article at that time, around about 1945 or so, when a teacher in London wrote an article in the journal and very openly, more or less, attacked the teaching and said that these terms are freely interchangeable. Now, we have seen yesterday that the dictionary definition of synonymous already indicates that within certain limits these terms are freely interchangeable, but that outside of these limits they are not freely interchangeable. Now, what are the limits within they are freely interchangeable? Mrs. Eddy says in the second question, are these terms synonymous? Says they all refer to the one God. So within that limit, they are freely interchangeable. That is, the moment I want to express the nature of God, I can express it through mind or spirit or soul or principle or life or truth and love. They all refer to the one God. Mind refers to the one God, therefore it's the one mind. Spirit refers to the one God, therefore it's the one spirit. Soul refers to the one God, therefore it's one soul, etc. But outside of this, when it refers to God, outside of this, they are not freely interchangeable because they mean definitely something different. Each one of them has different characteristics, and we have seen the method of how to arrive at these different characteristics. I will come back to it again and show you the difficulties which we have in the analysis. But first of all, I think I have stated now this very clearly, that within certain limits they are interchangeable when they refer back to the oneness. The moment they have to show the nature and essence and wholeness of being, then they are no more freely interchangeable. That is, if we interchange them, we alter the meaning. The moment we give an explanation of something and say mind, we mean something very different than when we put in the same sentence spirit or soul. It expresses a different nature or essence or wholeness. Now, another critic is this, which will come up again and again. Those who do not like to study and who just like to say God is all and God is love and God is wonderful and all is well and God is all in all, and have an innate resistance towards any intellectual culture, any scientific culture, any intelligent investigation into Christian Science, they come along and say, why didn't Mrs. Eddy say so, what we say? Why didn't she say you have to go and study the synonymous terms? Yes, why didn't she say so? She did. She surely did, huh? I mean, we can see how much teaching it involves to only to pervade something. Well, she only had 600 pages to write for the whole subject. But I was interested to see in those older notebooks from her class that she made quite a big point on this. I just read you from a class book from one of the last classes in 1888, where Martha Vogue, I think you know her by her name as a very intelligent student of Mrs. Eddy, she said that Mrs. Eddy said, when the magnitude of the infinite began to dawn upon her, she could not see how God could know himself. But she saw that he was all in all. She knew that he knew himself. She said at times she would have to wait and could not go further. And then one of the terms for God would come to her and she could go on. And so she knew that every term was given to her through inspiration. So this is a first point. You can see what Mrs. Eddy was going through. She tried to explain the nature of God. And she couldn't see at first how she would be able to explain the nature of God. And then her first point was that she began to see that God knows himself. And actually, the moment we see that God knows himself, we also see that God will interpret himself to us in an intelligent way. And so, after she had admitted that God knew himself, one term after the other, one synonym term after the other flowed into her consciousness. And sometimes she said she had to wait until a right new term would come to her. Perhaps you have noticed that in her first edition of Science and Health, she doesn't use the term mind as a synonymous term for God. She had spirit and soul, principle and life and truth and love, but not mind. Mind came as a last one, and came really only after she had to deal with Kennedy, with animal magnetism and with malpractice, and began to see that the nature of God is mind, divine mind. But she only saw that a few years later. So, little by little, these synonymous terms dawned on her. And then she says in that class, when she first commenced teaching, it was impossible for her to give her students these terms and have them in any way comprehend or apply them. She could only talk to them on the lowest plane of healing the sick. So you could see, we sometimes can hardly think back what the general mental atmosphere was at Mrs. Eddy's time. We always think, people have always been thinking the way we are thinking. And to see and feel or sense how at that time people were thinking is not always easy. Here she gives a very nice indication where she says at that time all what the people were interested in were, how do I get healed? The doctor can't heal me, so how can I get healed? They didn't have a much higher interest in being, they didn't investigate Christian Science for the sake of knowing truth and being, but for the sake of getting healed, of getting their problems solved. Naturally, today, the interest in the world is much bigger in finding out what is being than in finding out how one can get healed. The medical science has advanced so much, and surgery has advanced so much, and pharmacy has advanced so much, that this question of getting healed is no more so important as it was at that time. But the world knows today that even if medical science or any other method could heal immediately everything, that the world would not be better off because of that. The individual may feel he is better off. He only may feel that way. If he is better off or not, that's a great question to me. But we know that if a people, a nation, is very healthy and very sane in every way, that it's the most dangerous thing that can happen. Most dangerous thing. Because then mankind is no more striving for truth and becomes self-confident and lax and says, well, anything can happen to us, we can manage it. So there is no more that inward striving there to strive forward, to strive for higher truth and so on. And perhaps your nation has been a fine example for that. I remember when I came here about 10 years ago, the whole mental atmosphere was very different from now. The atmosphere was, we are America and we can do anything. We can do anything. Just let us do it. Just let us step in and we fix it. And what is it today? See, I think it's the period you go through is, in a way, very uneasy, to say the least, but the most healthiest thing that could happen to America. I think it's the healthiest thing, because it will bring America back to those wonderful ideals which make up America, and begin to strive again, and begin to see again that there is something more than just to be able to earn a lot of money and to be the richest nation in the world and to have the most television sets and the best cars and the biggest cars and so on, that there is to a nation and to a people and to an individual 10 times more, 100 times more, that there is an ideal. And I think all this tribulation will be the best thing that could happen to America. It will be that period of chemicalization which will eventually bring forth the best which is here. Well, perhaps I shouldn't have mentioned that because it's always getting a bit personal or national, but in a way it's good to see that just well-being, physical well-being, financial well-being, is a very dangerous thing. And so to see that the world as a whole, you see, is much more striving to know the truth as such than to find a better way of finding physical health is a great step forward, something very healthy. She goes on and says that, yes, I was quoting that up to that point in 1888, she could not teach the synonymous terms because the people were not willing to listen to that. All they were interested in was how to get healed. But then she says, upon the truth of these terms, these synonymous terms, for God rests the basis of the science. In fact, they are the science. Here is a wonderful note from Mrs. Eddy's class, which shows the importance of studying those seven synonymous terms, that they are the science. In a later note, somebody has written down and said, Mrs. Eddy said, if we were really conscious of the meaning of the synonyms of God, this would heal every case. This is a very enlightening statement, because here she shows that really the whole teaching on how to give a treatment, how to heal, is centering around about a very little point, namely, do you understand the seven synonymous terms? If you look and read those many, many books written by Christian scientists, outside Christian scientists, Kimball book and so on, all telling how to handle rheumatism, how to handle lung disease, how to handle heart disease, how to handle indisposition, and how to handle blood pressure and so on and so on and so on. A whole recipe book, like a cooking book. Yes. This is the teaching that is still given today. See, that is what usually a pupil wants to hear in class teaching. How does one handle such a case, such a case, such a case, such a case, such a case? And for each one, an individual trick. A big trick really here is the shortcut, namely science, which says, if we would understand those seven synonymous terms, that's the consciousness which is so big, so embracing, that it includes everything. See, I will come back to this to show you that this is the modern way, especially in cybernetics, how one can convey more information by having these super symbols which comprise the whole. Well, these seven synonymous terms are great super symbols. Well, I just can show you it here. You see, we have them here. You have here the whole list of ideas. Perhaps we know about 700 or 800 of them in our compendium. See, well, all these 800 can be classified together through giving super symbols. Here, perhaps the 100 ideas of mind can just be classified as mind, as one tone, mind. That includes all the ideas of mind, if we understand them. See, and so we get a very simple presentation of being, if you understand it, you see, which convey the whole meaning of being and comprise the whole meaning of being. This is actually what apparently Mrs. Eddy had said in the text, in the class, and so I don't think that we should take any serious notice that if people say, why didn't Mrs. Eddy say we should study this and this way? I'm so glad that Mrs. Eddy didn't say at her time, study the synonymous terms the way we do it today. Because at that time, people would have made a mess of it. The time would not have been ready to handle it properly. And they may have made a mess of it. And so she always trusted, like Jesus, she always trusted the idea that when the time is ripe, the idea will speak for itself. This is the great mystery, you see, that Jesus could leave us without giving a single written statement of his teaching and trusting completely the idea that the idea will, at the right time, speak for itself. I wish I had this enormous trust, because from time to time I think, well, how shall this idea go on? I don't see many of my students taking it up and putting everything into it and so on. And then I think and say, well, how was it in earlier times? It was just an enormous trust that the idea will find its own channels and its own form and will do the job. Now, going further in this study of the synonymous term, after a while, when we got out our compendiums and the fundamentals and talked about the seven synonymous terms and so on, people in the field began to ask, why doesn't the movement teach the seven synonymous terms? After all, they are in the definition of God. And so from a certain point onward, around about the 1950-55, you began to see that the movement thought, well, we can do as well as the Dalit people. And so they began to write in the journal articles mentioning the synonymous term and saying that they are important. The lectures went around the world and were stressing the synonymous terms and so on. And what they write is a bit poor. Why? Because none of them has ever made an intelligent analysis of the seven synonymous terms. It's a pity, because when Canham, when he was president of the Mother Church, he went around the world, you know, and gave all these lectures and, to the people. And in his lecture, he made the following statement. But when he was attacking theology, who was saying God is dead and so on, he said, instead of centering on the many magnificently rational as well as spiritual perceptive ways of identifying and defining God, some of the new theologians insist on denying God. See, what he said instead that we would center our interest on the many magnificently, is that the right word? Magnificently rational, see, he said rational, as well as spiritual, perceptive ways of identifying and defining God. So he was more or less asking the world to get a rational and spiritual analysis and definition of God and centering our effort on finding out that instead of just saying God is dead. He didn't know, actually, because he wasn't so much engaged in the policy of the Mother Church, that 20 years ago we were put out of the Mother Church because of just doing that. You see, he was just asking the world and the movement to concentrate on intelligent and rational spiritual analysis and definition of God, and that was the reason why they put us out of the church, because we did that. Because we said, here is a rational and spiritual, an intelligent and inspired analysis of what God is, through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, and analyzing mind as the ideas characterizing mind, analyzing spirit as ideas characterizing spirit, and so on. That very thing was the reason why they put us out of the church. You can read it in the statement of Mr. Dawley. There you have the whole correspondence. It began all over pages and pages of letters about the definition of God. One of the lecturers went round and he felt he had also to show that the movement knows something about the synonymous terms. And he was going around and he was saying that the synonymous terms are necessary and are most important, and that the way one could do that was, like a friend of his was doing, that every time a quality of one of the seven synonymous terms would come to her mind, she would put it down under mind. And in this way get the whole list of qualities which was characterizing mind. Can you see the... Now I have to be very tactful. Can you see that that is not right? That's tactful enough. You see what they have done? Instead of what we have been showing here, taking God and putting it through the prism and go to the textbook and say, I don't know what mind is, but the textbook will show me. No matter if the textbook showed me something about mind which I didn't think was mind. And they did just the opposite. They were sitting there and went out from the human concept of mind. What humanly they felt was a quality of mind, and put it down, and made a law of it. Can you see the complete opposite way of analysis? It isn't a scientific way of analysis if you go out from what you think it might be.
They went out from
it. They went out from the opposite, yes. So, let's be clear, you know, let's have a pure sense about these things. We are not going to fight anybody, but we jolly well will stand on our hind legs and say, our standpoint is clear, is scientific, and we can stand for it. How was our method? Here we have it. We go out from the textbook. We ask, what does the textbook say mind is? What does the textbook say what spirit is? Not what we think it might be, but how it comes to me. I just have a certain funny feeling in my stomach when people say, it came to me. Yes, it can be revelation, but in most cases it is just one's own thought. It can be revelation because the Christ comes to us. But in most cases, just one's own sense that was evolved and was put forward. So the safest way is to be at first always scientifically objective. Scientifically objective means that one is willing to put aside, when one studies, one's own sense of it. Every time I approach the textbook, I'm not approaching it and think, I jolly well know already quite a lot about this textbook. Perhaps if I squeeze it a little bit more, I get something more out of it. And if it's only a little drop. See, I always go to the textbook by that sense. I don't know what is in it. I'm blank. I'm blessed are the pure. Yes. That's where it starts. I know that I don't know. That's always the starting point. Not I know jolly much. I'm quite a guy now at this textbook, you know. Now, always approach it anew and say, I really don't know it. And I don't make any material picture about it, I have no mental reservation, no mental preconceptions. I just am blank, and I just listen to what the textbook says again. And in this way, naturally, then the objective truth can really flow into one's mind, and then it becomes subjective afterwards. But the other way around is a dangerous one. There are a few enlightened people like Mrs. Eddy was, and as we can become, if we train ourselves properly to start with the divinely subjective. But for one born of a woman, science must be a discovery. And we jolly well have to become a woman and know how to give birth to it. Then we will find science in an objective way. So, this is another critic. I just go on and show you quite a few other things which you have to know. Can you put this out? Write this out. Yeah. Perhaps you just stop a moment. Now, see, I showed you how we study the synonymous terms. It looks pretty simple. You just see that you have to study mind and go through all the references of mind and write out what mind says. And you give with a single term, you write out what you feel the text says about mind. And when you have finished that whole list, and it is a big list then it is not right. Don't think that it is right then. It's wrong at that point. And that's the point where our critics naturally don't see why. Because they try this study and find completely different ideas than what we have found. Because they don't go further than just making that list, and that list will be wrong. There's no harm about that. See, when we were studying, I remember that before the war, the first study I made about the synonymous term, I got, perhaps 200 terms on mind, and perhaps 200 on spirit, and so on. And I began to see, or we began to see, that many of these terms which we would write out under mind would appear again under spirit, and again under soul, and under principle, and under life, or perhaps truth or love. And so the critics come and say, you see, you are wrong. These ideas are used with all seven synonymous terms. And there, well, they stop and they say, well, you are wrong, that's the end of it. Now, why? How do we go further? You see, first of all, we must remember, synonymous terms in a certain length refer to the one God. And in outside of this limit, they are different. So naturally, at the beginning of our analysis, where we didn't see where that limit is, we would get a lot of ideas which actually refer to the one God, as God. And so we had a whole mixture of ideas which characterized a synonym with those ideas which characterize not the synonym, but God. For you must not forget, see, that the definition of God is not what I have given you. I said God is defined as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, but it's not true. Sometimes I tell a little lie just to make the teaching a bit easier. But that's the way every science operates. They first have to take the rough material, you see, and then slowly chisel out that which has to be chiseled out. Because God is defined as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite. See, it has, therefore, God's definition is a 4 plus a 7. See, that's the definition. Now, naturally, if we only analyze the synonymous term as a 7, we do not take in account that each of the synonymous terms is reflecting also the 4. Also, the incorporeal, and the divine, and the supreme, and the infinite, because these refer to one God.